Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, at the Players' Championship, we had a blowout, commanding, victorious performance from Scottie Scheffler, undoubtedly the world number one. We get into all that and the action from Sawgrass. Plus, I had a couple golf recaps to share with everyone, both on the course and with a new golf concept that's helping out my game as well, and our thoughts on the Valspar Championship. We're tuned into throwback memories, puppies, the Oscars, and a whole lot more. And this week's guest, in honor of St. Patrick's Day week, which is a arrived. We've got David Conlon from Tourism Ireland, a really cool conversation surrounding Ireland, the Emerald Isle, golf in Ireland, the 19th hole, and a whole lot more. Plus weird ice cream and pure Mahamantashen when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. They make the phone caddy, they make the swing aid tumblers, the cigar holders, and basically everything that golfers out there need to keep their cart accessorized. So if you're looking to get a gift out there for someone or a golfer in your life, or you just don't quite know what to get them, this is an easy accessory that they can add into their life and into their golf bag for a really low price. And you can check it out at desertfoxgolf.com for the phone caddy and everything else they have to offer. Our promo code Course of Life gets you 10% off. Again, promo code Course of Life to save 10% off of everything, brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Voris Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was the Players at TPC Sawgrass. We had three aces on the week.
Yes.
Including, a one hopper on Sunday into the cup on 17 on that island green. It was a gorgeous week down there just south of Jacksonville. Fantastic as always. And Scotty fucking Scheffler.
Yeah, man.
$4.5 million. He takes the Players and he becomes just the third player to win both the Players and Masters in a 12-month stretch. Alex, can you name the other two golfers that have done it?
Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson.
You're half right. I mean, Tiger's always a good guess, but not Phil. You got to go back a ways. It is another giant of the game.
Greg Norman.
No. That would be more hilarious.
It was a troll shot at Greg Norman, who never won the Masters, by the way.
Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah. Hey, that's good company, right?
Yeah.
That's good company to be part of. I mean Scottie Scheffler is the hottest golfer in the world. He's number one right now, unequivocally. And it's funny because we're doing all this big three talk with Rory, Rahm, and Scheffler, who seem to be just tussling musical chairs for who wins each week. And every once in a while, Scottie Scheffler just reminds you, oh, by the way, when we come around to the biggest and the best spectacles in golf, that's when I really show up. And he did it yet again with a commanding performance, a three-touchdown win, if you will, at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah, it was awfully commanding to take back that number one spot. Or did he already have it? I don't even remember anymore.
Well, it's back unequivocally his now. It's been tussling between him and Rahm for a bit. And again, it was done not only with putting, but just consistency off the tee. The guy hits just absolutely missiles. That pure, soft landing fade. No one hits it better right now in golf. And you can tell he's just got that wonderful emptiness that you and I occasionally find mm-hmm. for maybe a hole or two. Where, hey, when you're just not thinking about anything and you're free flowing and just letting the game happen, it sometimes isn't that hard, and he's just illustrating that all the time right now.
So Scotty, we know, loves to win in the spring.
He does. I mean, you, this is his season right now.
You yeah. tweeted this out that he's gonna win the Players, he's gonna win the Masters again. I mean, can he win outside of the spring? That's my question right now.
Right. Yeah. But right, what's right in front of us, like you mentioned, is this three-peat right here. It's the Players now. Week off at Valspar. He's coming to Austin here to defend. And how the hell does he not make at least the weekend, if not Sunday, a match play? He's finished second here at 2021 and won in 2022. And then a week off before he defends at Augusta. Who says he can't run the table and win all three? I mean, a run that would be if he double defends here in the next 3 weeks on top of the amazing win at Sawgrass.
if he were to win at the final Austin Dell match play, by the way, the last one, which is just horrendous.
Sad news.
And then win again at the Masters, he's going to be number one for like 3 years.
It should sustain for a while.
He doesn't even have to do anything.
It should sustain for a while, you would think, unless Rory or Rahm has something to say in a major. Yeah, that's going to hold up for a long time. And listen, the answer to go roundabout in your question is, maybe he's going to rake up all his wins in the spring and summer. Some guys are just Florida swing early year type of players.
Yeah.
I would contend that maybe Tiger Woods was more of an early year type player. If you look back on the totality of his victories on tour, you didn't see very many past July or August. So, you know, everyone's got their spots on the schedule, and Scotty seems to love it where it is right now.
I will say that while Scotty Scheffler doesn't seem to win outside of the spring, or at least he didn't last year, he still was like top 10 in almost every tournament. So
consistency pays off in the world rankings as well, too. And by the way, in the lovely prize money, which you illustrated, what was that? You said 4.5 million for the win.
5 million. Alex, what would you do? What would you buy first with 4.5 million?
So it would be like new car, second home, maybe boat, golf course membership. Just right off the bat, those are just four things I'm thinking of selfishly for myself.
You're going to get a boat before the golf course membership?
I can get them all at the same time. That's the beauty.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay.
I can literally just, I can make them all probably the same call. That's the nice part when you get 4.5 in. Scotty's talked about the money, like kind of not phasing him at this point, and he looks at it and he thinks it's cool for a half a second. And he really does display that just like, I don't give a damn, I'm just enjoying myself type of attitude that we all aspire to get to on the golf course. And he's doing it on a world-class stage.
As long as he continued to have that mindset, he's going to keep winning. That said, I think the one thing he said he does do differently now is he, like most golfers, let's start winning. You can order double meat at Chipotle.
Yeah, that's a big flex there. Whenever you see that person line order double meat, you're like, whoa, all right, okay, bud. Geez, paycheck just hit for you? Golly, man. And the Scheffler fact I wanted to bring up with you, I don't know if you saw this as well. Scotty Scheffler drinks coffee. He just revealed in the press conference last week. Every morning he drinks coffee at home. But during a tournament week, when he's on the road playing in the PGA Tour, he doesn't drink coffee at all. Mm-hmm. My question to you, Mike, is should he bring coffee now on tour? Imagine what he'd be like with a little coffee energy in the morning. Would it be better or worse? What do you think?
I mean, the formula is working right now, so I would mess with it.
I guess so.
I would say, you know, sometimes coffee is great sometimes, but I don't always like to drink coffee if I'm going into something that's going to make me maybe a little nervous. Because it's a nice little inside now. So when I'm nervous, nervous.
There you
and
go.
Coffee is a diuretic and makes you have to go too. So it just makes you have to go double. So maybe he's trying to, maybe that's his issue. I don't know.
Great segue. It may have been too much bathroom activity for John Rahm, I guess, who withdrew on Friday, right?
That's right. He did have a stomach bug or stomach trouble.
I don't know if you're going to say it or I will, but I'll just get it out there. I'm wondering if John Rahm had the shits. We haven't really got the full answer. I don't know if he's ever going to say, but John Rahm, stomach illness. Hope he feels better and gets back out there soon. But yeah, that was a precarious withdrawal from the world number two now on Friday.
That's right. Let's take a look at your best pick from the weekend. And that, of course, was Victor Hovland, a tie for third. Is he just going to, you know, hang out in top tens on leaderboards in these big events and just not win?
Yeah, you know what? I love Hovland. I think he's got a lot more electricity to his game than this guy I'm about to compare him to. But he's giving off like early career Matt Kuchar vibes with these finishes right now. He's not that guy at all, and he's far from it in terms of personality. But I've noticed that I'm loving it, picking Victor Hovland on a week-to-week basis. But I can't quite cash him for his PGA Tour victories. He's lifted the trophy before, Mike. He, like we say, he's more of a destination guy. So I guess Sawgrass wasn't quite enough of a tropical destination for him to get over the top and win.
It's true. I just want to shout out two past guests who unfortunately looked like they were going to be in the top 10 or top 20 even, and then had some really bad holes. Let's start with Taylor Montgomery. He was easy money, top 20 every time, and then he put it in the water twice on 17.
Yeah, not the greatest finish there.
He was 3 under par in 14, and by 18, he was 4 over. He went bogey, double bogey, quad bogey.
And that the course giveth and taketh away. Yeah. And Sawgrass is the ultimate example. He dropped like a million foot bomb on 11 early, just an hour before the disaster at 17. And that's that theater that you wait for when you watch that mm-hmm. course and that hole in this venue every single year is we always wonder who's going to get Sawgrassed, who's going to get screwed at 17, and who's going to hit shots that make them look like an average everyday person. You and I know Taylor is taking this on the chin and just laughing it off. And it's all just a joke to him because things are okay for him long term. But yes, an embarrassing moment was handed out to a past guest as well.
Yeah. Dylan Wu, also a past guest, did a little better, tied for 35 finish, but he did post four over on the back nine, which was not great.
It's that carnage. And friends were texting me about it and saying, why is Sawgrass playing so much harder on Sunday? Like the conditions don't look that crazy. I'm like, just look at what's in front of them in the moment right now. Like nerves and Sunday are enough to make a golf course three shots harder, especially when you start throwing in some sucker pins and you got water everywhere, Mike. It doesn't take mm-hmm. much to mess up, even with a wedge at 17. And we saw that water balls all week. But like you did say, three hole-in-ones. So there were some highlights to be had as well.
That's right. All right, let's talk about your personal golf game now that we've talked about the players in Sawgrass, because you got to you've got out and played a little bit both in the real world and in the virtual world.
That's right. Yes, well said. The real world visit, Mike, had more highlights this past Friday than any round of golf I've played in maybe a decade. It was unreal. It was just one of those highlight days. It wasn't crazy good on the scorecard. I just broke 80 on the last with a par at 18, so that was nice. But I had a near slam dunk. And when I say near slam dunk, it was about 120-yard par three. And this wedge was all over the flag. The ball mark was about 6-7 inches left of and behind the cup. I almost had my first ace, Mike, as a slam dunk. My heart skipped a beat, to say the least.
Yeah. But it didn't go in, so you're still part of us mere mortals.
Of course, and of course I missed the birdie putt. You know, I'm burying that lead too. But the birdie I did have, which came was my second highlight of the day, was about an 80-foot putt on a par three that broke about 10 feet right to left.
Nice.
One of those putts where I could stand out there all day and never make one, but I had my moment, and my buddy Anthony was there to see it, his last round out before he has kid number three. So it was a good time had by all at Crystal Falls on Friday.
And then your new home outside of the golf course is Golfinity, right?
Yeah, Golfinity. You like that name, don't you?
Yeah. It's interesting.
Hey, listen, infinite possibilities if I get regular training and performance at Golfinity. That's the way I'm looking at it right now. So basically, it's the simulator experience, but it allows you to work on your game, see launch lie angles, and all the details you need to know about every single swing and shot. And I'm learning about my game. And the cool part is I can do it while playing 18 holes in 45 minutes. How's that for pace of play?
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I keep meaning to go to one of these golf simulator places. Let's out here. And I think it'd be a good way to get the wife to come play because she likes to play, but she doesn't like to waste like 4 hours every day.
Yeah, 18 holes in 45 minutes, wraps, sandwiches, burgers, and drinks, full bar menu, big screen TVs everywhere you look. It's a fun hangout. So next time you get out to Austin, we'll definitely be playing out here. But check out Golfinity if you haven't already. I'll be sure to be posting a lot of content from there. And maybe I'll make a hole in one there before in the real world.
That doesn't count.
That's up for debate. I'm going to debate that with the Golfinity team because I'm going to stop by there next week during Dell Match Play Week. So I'll ask that to some people there and see if that counts.
All right. Let's look ahead to where the PGA Tour goes next. They stick around in Florida for the Valspar Championship. You should go back into the archives because we talked with the tournament director.
Yes, right? Tracy West.
Tracy, that's right. So go back into the archives, take a listen to that. But this field is still got some big names in it. Justin Thomas, Matt Fitzpatrick, Keegan Bradley are in it. Also looking to go Jordan Spieth and Justin Rose.
Yep, all facts.
So Some good names out there for this one.
You named a couple I like. I like Rosie. Remember, I had him for the AT&T Pebble Beach win at 24-1 odds. I think he's back on my card this week. Runyourpool.com for the full preview and see all my picks. The one guy you left out is the important one on this storyline, which...
We're talking about Mr. going for three-peat here?
Yeah, I think we had this conversation around Victor Hovland at Maya Coba, actually, and it did not happen.
I think we did, yeah.
Here we are again with that. Sam Burns going for the three-peat. This is an interesting venue. An event, Mike, because if you remember a few years back, Paul Casey went back to back here. And then after that, Sam Burns went back to back. So the real question is, do you like a three-peat for Sam Burns, or do you like a new person to go back for back and just keep this wonderful pattern going here at Innisbrook?
You know what? Let's give it to Sam Burns.
Yeah, I like him, honestly. I think it's one of those things where he actually hasn't even had great form in the recent weeks. But I think coming back and getting the good vibes of a course he loves could fuel his fire. And I would not be surprised if he's obviously in contention looking for that three-peat. It's a very cool course. I've actually played the course a long time ago, Mike, back when I was in high school visiting my late grandfather there when he lived down there. I got to play the Snake Pit, finished decently. I think I shot somewhere in the 80s. It's a tricky little course, a little bit of undulation for what's typically flat golf courses out in Florida. So it should be a fun test. And like you mentioned, a pretty solid field overall this week.
So your full picks will be up on Twitter. And of course, you'll have your article on runyourpool.com. So you can check that out as well. Let's go ahead and switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I have to give a puppy update.
That's right. Yes. For anyone who doesn't remember, recently brought your new puppy, Laika, into the family. As of what? How long are we in? A few months now?
We've had Laika for about 4 months now, and she just turned 6 months on this past Saturday.
Oh, boy. All right. So how's she doing?
She's doing great. She's wicked smart. So about 3 weeks ago, she was in regular puppy training class, and they upgraded her to obedience 1, and then in 2 weeks they said, okay, she can go to obedience 2.
Wow. It was like taking the AP courses in high school, you know?
Yeah. She's just like, she's too smart. She's too smart, and she's old enough and good enough. She's good enough right now to do agility training, which we want to do with her because she likes to climb up on top of things. But we're going to wait till she's 8 months because she's still growing. Her joints are still growing. So we don't want it. Stunt the growth.
And how are we doing on the chewing issue? I know that was an issue in months past.
My hand has no cuts on it right now, and neither does the wife from the dog.
Well, that's a good sign. That's some progress.
She doesn't chew at our ankles as much anymore as she did either. When we tell her to leave it, she leaves it and she walks away. She's gotten really good at self-play. She still, though, likes to climb up on top of you and go to your face and give you wet willies in your ears. So that's the next thing we need to work on with her.
Wet willies. Okay. That's the next lesson in training. Love it.
It is.
Good stuff. Before we get to our Oscars recap, I just want to shout out a quick Instagram that I found that I've been tagging you in a bunch because I can't get over some of the clips they post. I'm shouting out the I Remember That Shit Instagram account for anyone who loves the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s nostalgia. It's the age that you and I grew up on. And let's just say it, Mike, it's basically the last thing that we all remember as a society before the world got really crappy, basically. In all
before
the worst
the internet
ways.
Came around? Is that what you're saying?
Basically. So before that all happened, there were some funny vintage TV clips, commercials, and all sorts of advertisements that are played on this feed. I sent you the trailer for the GoldenEye N64 commercial. There's just all sorts of gems like that I appreciate from the feed.
Did you know? So we have a Nintendo Switch, and they have on there games. You can play games from the Sega Genesis or GameCube or the N64, and there is GoldenEye on there for the N64.
Oh, so my favorite level.
Your Switch.
Gosh, take me to the library. Let's shoot it out. I love it. Four screens, just like the old days. Good stuff. So I remember that shit. That was a fun Instagram that I just found this past week. And like I mentioned, this past weekend, the Oscars, Mike.
Yeah,
big
let's
week.
Talk about it.
I wrote my betting preview on Run Your Pool. It was mixed reactions. I had some winners. Admittedly, I didn't hit on all the biggest categories. I had Austin Butler instead of Brendan Fraser. And I didn't quite predict the level of dominance for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which is officially their year this year.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once won everything everywhere at the Oscars and almost all at once.
Well said.
So they did dominate. And I just need a shout out that one half of the Daniels, the directing and writing duo behind it, is an alumnus of a program that I volunteer with, Destination Imagination. So it just goes to show that you should have kids. If you have kids, they should do DI because they could turn into Oscar winners.
Really, really interesting. I like that. Yeah. Nice connection. I like that. The creatives of the world starting at DI, right?
There you go.
Good stuff. Yeah, it was a good ceremony and show indeed. And I love Jimmy Kimmel probably walked the line on comedy and controversy, maybe better than anyone. And I think he did a great job hosting as well. So shout out
Kimmel. No one got slapped this year.
There were no slaps. He did list. Yeah, unfortunately, the consequences were you'd be getting your own Best Actor award if you did go up on the stage. But fortunately, no one did. So we had avoided that.
All right, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, it is St. Patrick's Day week, which...
Oh, yeah, you have to brace yourself, don't you?
Oh, my God. I think we've taken like 100,000, 200,000 tourists or something this week. There's more tourists like coming into the city of Savannah for St. Patrick's Day than there are residents.
Wow. Yeah, it's not just an Irish holiday, as you're proving right now.
There are a lot of Irish here in Savannah and, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, everybody's Irish.
Love it.
So, it's happening. And so in honor of St. Patrick's Day, that means we have to have someone Irish on the podcast.
Yeah. We're taking a little audio trip to the Emerald Isle. How about that? From my trip to the PGA show, it was cool because there are all sorts of different tours and boards and destinations for golfers around the world showcased at the show. But I got to connecting with the people from Tourism Ireland, which is a country that I've always had on my list. And I wanted to learn more about the Emerald Isle and all the really cool golf destinations I've seen in my years following and watching the game. Who better than David Conlon from Ireland himself?
That's right. So we'll have this conversation with David in just a second. But first, let's talk about our friends at Voris Golf. Let's say you get lucky, Alex, and you get a trip to Ireland and you're going to play golf there.
Okay.
And it's just beautiful. You're trying to take pictures of it with your phone, but you have to take your glove off, right?
Not ideal.
Off to do it. Not with the Voris Golf glove. It has patented through touch technology, so you can keep that glove on your hand and use your phone and use that touchscreen with the glove still on your hand. And we've used these out in the course and we love them. They think they're great. They're super soft, they're grippy, and they work as advertised. Both your thumb and your forefinger have that through touch technology. You don't think about that forefinger, but you need it.
That's important.
You really do. So Voris Golf, they're German for advancement. That's what Voris means, advancement. And they're certainly advancing the game with that through-touch technology. They've got some really cool polos and hats on their website as well. It's vorisgolf.com. And did you know that you can save some money while you're over there too? It's 18% off anything with the promo code COL18. Again, that promo code COL18 at vorisgolf.com.
Welcome back. We're live from the PGA show. It's Course of Life podcast. We have a really special guest. I've seen a lot of representation for Ireland, which everyone knows as a golf mecca. For anyone out there who's looking to plan an elaborate golf vacation, this could be the conversation for you. It's David Conlon joining. He represents everything golf with Tourism Ireland. David, how are you doing today?
Alex, thanks for having me.
It's great having you. First impressions of the show. This is the second show for both you and I. How about the difference between last year and what we're seeing this year?
It's incredible, the difference. I think there's, aside from the size and scale, I think certainly with the brands and the gravitas, the brand that the equipment manufacturers bring back, I think there's a new buzz about it. Last year, I think people were quite tentative first back in person.
Right.
Not that people were walking on eggshells as such, but this year is like the industry is back. The industry is booming and you can really feel that energy when you're here.
Definitely. Yeah. And obviously international travel coming back in a big way this past year or so, especially for the U.S. audience listening. Tell everyone about Ireland's representation here and why you guys are promoting now to be a good time to go there.
First, in relation to our stand partners, we bring over a lot of industry from both north and south of Ireland. So we'll have over 35 here in total. And that adds to a cohort of Irish industry that are here and they come independently anyway. And you'll see that represented on the stand. And we have every every corner of the country is being represented. Every type of course has been represented, from like our pristine links and our prestige links to a few of the hidden gem parkland courses that we have to mix and make sure that Ireland is a destination, is kind of full service for everyone, whatever you want in terms of your golfing experience. We have it there to supply, and our industry members can talk to the PGA professionals who lead on trips, can talk to buyers and tour operators from other countries and actually sell their product to as wide an audience as possible. And look, the appetite to travel now is absolutely there. We've had 2.5 years of pent-up demand that kind of rolled through the system last year.
And all those golf trips we couldn't get done
for a
while.
Trips, like 2019 golf trips potentially only happened last year. So have this demand that's rolled over. 2023 promises to be a bumper year. A lot of our courses, certainly in the Southwest, are at near capacity. So we're looking at other regions to expand in terms of our promotion and the product that we have diversified in terms of the regions. The Northwest is where it's at for us at the moment in terms of like the quality of the product, the welcome of the people, and the fun that people can have outside of just the golf course.
Exciting. All right, let's walk through some of the different courses and landmarks, and also some of the players that are representing Ireland right now in the larger world scale of the game as well. The exciting thing that we're talking a lot about this week is that the Open is going to be back at Portrush.
Yes.
2025. I know one person who's going to be very happy about that is Shane Lowry. I'm sure there'll be a lot of other people that are happy about that. But talk about what that means to Ireland, specifically have the Open back, because that's a big deal to now keep it coming, potentially regular rotation.
It's incredible. It's what it gives. Like, let's think about what it gives to the area. Like 190,000 people come into the Open over the course of the week. That is going to expand out to over 200,000 people. The course is adequately set up to host that in terms of logistically. They've done it before in 2019. It comes back after just 6 years, which is a very quick rotation. It's a quick rotation, and I think it was testament to how well the event was run and received. And embraced by the Irish people and the international public as well. And we really got to showcase the best of what we had. Like, it's worth hundreds of millions to our local, to the national economy, but local and in the wider regions. And what it does is, certainly in its location in Portrush, being at the very north of Ireland, it allows people to get into some different areas in terms of their golf experience as well, and expose the likes of a Ballyliffin, which will host the RNA Amateur Championships next year. It'll be the first location that can host that on a 36-hole complex. That's just across the Foyle, mouth of the Foyle River or Foyle Estuary in Donegal. And the product in Donegal has risen and risen and risen. So what you're seeing by the return of the Open is we're able to showcase the best of what we have. Portrush is certainly at that level. I think it's world-renowned at this stage in terms of being one of the classic Harry Cole's design courses that we have, and we have many. And it is the Open that sticks in people's mind as being one of the more memorable ones, because obviously it's been the first time in a long time there's been a home winner for the Irish.
He lifts his head, the hands up over his head, that's a moment that sticks forever.
So. And Shane is an unbelievable ambassador of Irish golf, for Irish golf. And I suppose we've a number of stories that'll build into that. Like, I suppose Rory McIlroy's return after his disappointment in 2019, devastating
everything Rory's doing in the world of golf beyond just the way he's putting the ball in the hole.
Exactly.
He's now become greater than just a world-class player. He's now an ambassador, a figure, a spokesman for the future of the game.
For golf, I suppose we would have always figured him and we would have always regarded him as an incredible ambassador for Irish golf. He's actually an incredible ambassador for golf as a sport. And we're just delighted that we have the likes of Shane, the likes of a Rory, the likes of a Leona Maguire.
I saw her at the CME tournament for the LPGA this past fall, and she's got that focus that's quite unmatched.
Exactly. A Solheim Cup rookie, and she takes home maximum points with Mel Reid beside her. Seriously, and turns into a hero in terms of her meteoric rise to golfing acclaim has been brilliant for the game. And in terms of, I suppose from a tourism perspective, then we can look at like, how do we leverage that? Like, Leona is from a course called Slieve Russell, which is a fabulous complex parkland course in the middle, right in the middle of Ireland, and it shines a light on those places that may not have done that. Rory, likewise, in terms of where he's come from in Hollywood, just outside of Belfast, and Shane as well, and right in the center of Ireland. So it's not just about our links courses as well, which those guys and girls have shown that you don't just have to grow up on links to be a pure links player, but you can really enjoy the product that we have to offer.
Now, well said. Appreciate you joining again, David Conlon, golf leader for Tourism Ireland here, joining us on the Course of Life live at the PGA Show. And that one other Irishman I got to shout out, just because I have an affinity for placing a bet or two each week on the PGA Tour, and I write a little bit of my spare time. Love Seamus Power, because that man knows how to finish high on the leaderboard. You put a little bet on him to finish in the top 10 or 20, he will get you there. So I've had a lot of fun wagering on Seamus Power and watching him play as well.
Yeah, like still leading the FedEx Cup rankings into the season.
That's awesome,
and I suppose, yeah, and like it's very it's brilliant for a guy like Seamus. Like, people look at it, a meteoric rise to success and to acclaim, and like it's for Seamus, it's been 10 years of working. Like a guy, a graduate of East Tennessee, he's a grinder, an absolute grinder, has done it the hard way in terms of coming up through the mini tours into Corn Ferry, and as soon as he got a shot, he took it with open arms. He's up into the top 50 in the world, about to head off to his second Augusta. It's been brilliant to see, and again, another ambassador that we can really hang our hat on from a representation perspective, and a person we're very proud of in Ireland. And we're a small island. We are a very, very small island. Right. Like north and south, we've about 6 million people. Like, you've a lot of cities in the US that are bigger than our whole country. And for us to produce that level of golfer who performs on the highest stage, I suppose spearheaded by the likes of Apoorv Carrington and Paul McGinley, like, we kind of forget that they were the original ones that carved the way for these guys to come through. And not only have these guys and girls continued in that vein, they've forged identities, careers, and been incredible brand ambassadors for Ireland, and especially golf.
Definitely, absolutely. Let's get into some of the golf specifically in Ireland, because I know our travel junkies want to hear a little bit about it. Let's just kind of get into the difference between golf in Ireland versus other parts of Europe. What can people in the US and North America expect when they go over to Ireland to play golf?
Oh, I think it's the diversity that sets us apart in terms of our links and parkland offerings. So to give some context, yeah, over 440 courses of a population of our size, we have a third of the world's links golf courses. And the accessibility that comes with that, because we're not a big island. So you're never more than, if you're in the center of Ireland, you're never more than 3.5 hours away from the coast. So links golf is always very, very accessible. Like, we have some of the world's best links courses, and that is without a doubt. Roy County Down consistently ranked there.
Yes.
New courses coming online. Like, I suppose people will always have heard of the Lahinches, the Watervilles, the Ballybunions, the Portmarnocks, Portrush, Royal County Down, for example. But we've new links offerings as well, especially in the Northwest. Rosapenna, their new course, St. Patrick's, which opened to worldwide acclaim, entered the Golf Digest rankings at 55 in the world.
Nice. Wow.
That's a Tom Doak course that has been reconstructed, that has been revamped. It was an old 36-hole complex. They've turned it. Tom Doak came, spread his magic dust all over the Northwest, and we've one of the best new links golf courses, and probably one of the last links golf courses that will be built. Okay. Gil Hance has just done a major refurbishment.
Show this week as well.
Exactly.
Too.
Gil Hance has done a major refurbishment of Nairn and Port New in Donegal. So we've that level of course designer with world acclaim and gravitas that are designing our and refurbing our links courses. And you add that to the quality of the courses that existed. And we obviously mentioned Lahinch and Ballybunion and the designers that come with that. The likes of a Harry Colt and the world leaders in 1920s course design, who, as Tom Watson said about Ballybunion, every course designer should go and see Ballybunion before they ever build a golf course. And that is where the esteem with which our courses are held. And we do have an interesting topography in terms of our links golf courses. We have big, big dune land, and that sets us apart. And the likes of an Enniscrone up in Mayo and Cairn, there's just these monstrous dunes.
How tall they get?
Like, we're talking 30, 40, 50 meters high.
Oh, God, how am I going to get out of there?
You play through them, play around them, don't play over them, and certainly don't play in them, because you're in for a long, long day. But then, like, when you think of our parkland offering, we're about to host in 2027 our second Ryder Cup, following on from the Ryder Cup in the K Club in 2006. So while we have that world-class links offering, we also have a parkland offering. The 2027 Ryder Cup is going to be held in Adair Manor, which is a Tom Fazio design.
Oh, okay.
Which is building on what's the momentum that we probably should have had in 2006. Obviously, things changed in the world in 2008, and we probably weren't able to capitalize on it as well as we could. But 2027, we're growing towards the Ryder Cup, having in 2025 obviously held our second Open Championship in Portland. So, like, we've got momentum, and we're very, very keen on showcasing the best of what we have from a Parkland and a Lynx.
Thank you earlier for correcting my mispronunciation. I said Lahinch. It's not. It's Lahinch.
Lahinch.
Lahinch. Okay. That's one of the more unique tracks. And one of the other ones I wanted to highlight was Port Marnock, because I've definitely seen that in my golf viewing days. Is it right? It's like quite literally set like a peninsula. Like there's water on like three sides of the course. That's a very unique setting. You wouldn't think that when you think Irish golf.
Exactly. And 25 minutes from the city center.
Yeah.
From Dublin city center. So it is an incredible design. It's one of, I suppose, and it differentiates itself. Our Lynx courses on the east coast of Ireland are quite distinct from our Lynx courses on the west coast.
And what's the main difference there?
Look, west coast is hit by the Atlantic seas and the winds that come off that. It leads to big, dramatic dune lines and enormous dunescapes. Courses are built through and around them, whereas on the east coast it's not hit as hard by the weather. The dune land is a little bit lower, it's a little bit flatter, the course designs are reflected on that. So it's very, very different. But Port Marnock, obviously having hosted the British Amateur actually in 2019, it's a course of incredible acclaim. It's had multiple Irish Opens. It's been the scene of Walker Cups. It's been the scene of the British Amateur Championships, as I have said. So it is a course of absolute esteem.
Yeah, it's a very neat track to look at, and I can't wait to maybe get there one day. So let's talk through that, what that looks like for people.
Yeah.
When I go to Ireland, when we make this Ireland trip happen, what are the ideal times of the year? I know the weather can be quite fickle there, but what are the best theoretical times of the year to play golf in Ireland?
Look, it's Ireland, so pack your wet gear. Chances are you might get a shower or two.
Be ready for adversity.
Be ready for adversity. But look, that comes with the type of golf that we offer. I suppose you play on the coast. You take the rough with the smooth in that regard. Excuse the pun. But for us, from a time frame, we're lucky. We do have a very temperate climate, so it doesn't get too hot, doesn't get too cold. So anytime from April right through to October, and we're lucky in terms of the daylight you have. Like in the middle of summer, you can literally get onto a golf course at 6:30 in the morning, and you could be hitting last balls at 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
So you've got it. That happens in the middle of summer. But look, our season definitely kicks off around the April time, and then continues right through to, as I said, early October.
Okay.
And the weather will not, the weather won't affect that in any way, shape, or form. Look, you're going to get some better weather in summer. We all know that. But hey, come forward for the real experience and test it anytime of year.
If I'm going to get it, I want the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me the whole menu. Let me see it all.
Absolutely. Look, that's part of it. Like, if you think you're going to come over and it's going to be bone dry, like, hey, you got a lucky week. You got a good week. But I suppose that's the nature of a little island in the North Atlantic that kind of punches above its weight in the golf terms.
The evil, cynical part of me almost wants to see what my golf game looks like when it's rainy and the wind is blowing across from the Atlantic.
Yeah,
I want to see it once, maybe.
Like you want to see like can you play in a 30 mile an hour crosswind when it's a bit wet and like your caddy's telling you to hit four extra clubs and into the wind, and you're hitting a 5-iron 120 yards, but it's the right club to do. So it'll test all facets of your game, no matter what handicap, no matter what type of golfer you are. And that is a big part of it as well. It's not just for the elite golfer at all. Like we have courses that suit every level. And most of all, I think it's the hospitality that comes along with it as well. It's the it's the overall experience, not just on a golf. When you go on a golf trip, you're on the golf course for 4 hours. You have another 20 hours in the day to fill. And I think Ireland offers so much more than other countries in terms of what they offer outside of the golf experience.
No, that's very cool. So let's talk about how that works. I guess let's phrase it in two types of trips. Maybe the by the book, regular standard vacation, not going too far from the median. Or the more adventurous traveler. It sounds like, you could just fly yourself right into Dublin, play Port Marnock, courses in the Dublin area, stay in the city if you wanted, or you could get more adventurous, hit the different corners, describe kind of the different paths you could take in an Irish vacation.
You've kind of described it, like how this can work. But like our access points are awesome in terms of Shannon Airport, Belfast Airport, Dublin Airport. So we have three international airports that exist there. So within 20 kilometers of landing, you're going to hit a golf course, and you're going to hit a lot of golf courses depending on what the need is. And as you said, there are more standard trips where people will come in, do a city break for a few days, and they'll play a couple of courses close by. You took Dublin, for example. If I took Belfast, you could be out in Arglass in about an hour. You could be down up in Royal Belfast in about 20 minutes from the airport. Okay. Yes, there are more standard trips. Look, if you want to go and experience something new and something fresh, get out to the West Coast. It'll take you about 3 hours to get out there. But then you're going to experience something that doesn't exist anywhere else from a golfing perspective. And the likes of a Cairn, Enniscrone, Sligo up in the northwest direction or down towards the southwest, which has, listen, some of the best golf courses in the world in terms of Ballybunion and Waterville. But look, we have four very distinct regions from a golfing perspective. And as a tourism body, we're keen on obviously promoting the ones that people maybe haven't heard as much about, but are no less significant or no difference in terms of the quality of the experience.
Now, well said indeed. David, well put regarding everything regarding the Irish experience and golf and tourism in Ireland. But we have to get to the important part, which is, I think, why maybe we first got together. We love featuring 19th hole content on our podcast. That is a backbone of every Course Absolutely. Of Life podcast episode. And I know you guys know how to do the 19th hole well. Let's talk about what sets the post-round clubhouse experience in Ireland apart from other parts of the world.
There's one answer. It's the people. Yeah. We are known for our hospitality. It's not a myth. People, you'll enter into a family when you get to the clubhouse afterwards. It's the welcome you get from. We're by nature a very, very friendly nation. We love seeing our tourists come in. We love seeing people come in and enjoy what we have to offer. And we get as much satisfaction out of that as actually doing it ourselves, to be honest. So, what sets us apart? There's nothing like coming in after a round and getting a nice grilled pint of Guinness into you. The food, the diversity in terms of the food that you're going to get is very much homegrown, very much organic, very much part of who we are. It kind of represents our farming background, our heritage in terms of the foods that you're going to get.
We want that taste of home when we're visiting.
You want exactly
your home.
Our home is like, what do we have to like? And people that do kind of experience this or look at it from a more broad perspective, I think, really do appreciate that. But certainly, our pubs, our hospitality, our drink, our people, that is what sets us apart. And that's what makes a 19th hole. I think a 19th hole as a concept, as an idea, what is it? Everyone wants to experience it, but it's almost hard to describe until you're actually there and in that moment. And look, seeing is believing. You have to come over it and see it to really know what it is. I could give you my interpretation of it, but it might be completely different for you, Alex, when you get over there and you experience it. It's like, this is what they were talking about.
No, I'm looking forward to it. You're putting the taste bud on me to get this trip in the works here. So I'm thinking about that for the months and years ahead. But let's get to the choice for you. When you do get into the 19th hole, what is your go-to meal and drink order? I'm guessing Guinness.
Yes.
But the food order, Guinness. When you finish 18, what hits best?
Oh, look, it can vary. If I'm early in the morning, I'll go for the traditional Irish breakfast. If we get an early round in, I'll go for the traditional Irish breakfast. But I'm a fan of an Irish stew afterwards. So pint of Guinness, Irish stew. It's kind of, as I said, our weather might not always be that warm. You get in, you get there's a fire going in the clubhouse, you get a pint of Guinness and a stew, and all of a sudden you start talking to people, conversing with your friends, and it's a real convivial kind of an atmosphere. And all of those little bits in terms of the drink, the food, it all adds to it in terms of the experience. And as I said, actually, you've got to come over and experience it, because we can talk about it, but seeing is believing. So that is the key to it.
Very cool. David, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Really cool to hear that perspective from Ireland. Obviously, check out Tourism Ireland out there if you're interested in hearing more about booking your trip. And hope to see you out there soon.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
And we're back. Great chat there with David about Ireland. Are we going? Do I need my passport set up? Because I need to renew it. So do I need to do that?
Yeah. These might be things you need to consider because I would absolutely love destination trip out there when he was describing Port Monarch and Lahinch and all these wonderful destinations and the uniqueness of the different sides of Ireland. You don't think about the different characteristics of the different parts of the country, but a very unique land. And I think we got to bring some extra rain gear as well, too. I have a feeling that we're not really anticipating how adverse the conditions can we be. So rain gear and bring that punch shot as well, too.
Sounds good. If you like that conversation with David Bliss, everything else we do here on this podcast, make sure you punch that subscribe button on the podcast app that you're using right now. Give us a rating too, a little thumbs up, 4 stars, 3 stars, 2 stars. If it's 1 star, I would hope you leave a comment as to why you think we're only worth 1 star.
I would be generally curious,
I appreciate that you've been listening to us for this long through the podcast, because at this point we're at, I don't know, 50 minute mark and you're still here, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way the trolls, you know, like the people you like you only listen to with a little bit of intensity, but the people you hate you actually listen to with even more intensity, you know what I mean? So I'll take some hate listeners, that's fine.
I would love to gaslight you, so go ahead and let me know how I can do that, and I will do that on a podcast.
Good stuff. Nice.
You can also follow us on Instagram, COL Podcast. He's Course of Life Alex. I'm MWRINC. We're on Twitter too. Course of Life 1 is Alex. I'm MWRINC. Let's talk March Madness. The bracket is out, Alex. And give me the champion. Who's it going to be right now?
Right. Yeah. Who's going to do it, right? Yeah. I've been toying back and forth between a few different teams. I don't love it, but I'm officially leading with the idea that Purdue could march all the way through this bracket as one of the top overall seeds, led by an impressive trio of guards, but also 7'5" tall Zach Edey. This guy's an absolute mountain if you haven't seen him play this year. So that's going to be pretty tough to defend. They've had a lot of experience in the Big Ten this season, so they're definitely one of my picks to potentially go all the way. But it's an interesting bracket. There's a lot of opportunity in each region. And like this goes every year with the bracket, you could know absolutely nothing or absolutely everything about college basketball. And the beauty of predicting this tournament is everyone's on an exact even playing field.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And of course, we've seen the unthinkable happen. So
St. Peter's.
Don't pick a one seed all the time anymore. It's probably not going to happen, but it could happen. So
let's go region by region. Just a thought here for everyone who's previewing at home on runyourpool.com. I did an entire couch potato preview, so you can exactly figure out how to watch each and every day of March Madness. But we'll start with the South region, because that's where Alabama is, Mike. Who? The number one overall seed, not just a football school anymore. Thoughts on that? Alabama, well, basketball school now.
They don't win college football championships anymore. So
they don't. They've also got a little bit of scandal going on. One of the players under arrest for potential alleged murder, and one of their star players may have had the weapon. It's a whole drama that's going to play out as this tournament goes on.
Is the Ivy in Princeton going to go the whole way out of this bracket then? Is that what you're telling me?
I love that. You're looking for a massive upset from the Ivy League, aren't you?
The Ivy always gets one win, usually. So
That could be their spot. Who knows? I don't know if I love Arizona to get through the region. Maybe Baylor's a potential sleeper team that's been quietly going about their business this year, which has Final Four experience. So watch out for them as maybe the team to beat Alabama in the South.
In the East, so you were saying it's going to be Purdue's bracket is what you're thinking there. So I guess that means the Vermont Catamounts aren't gonna do it.
I know that's a sexy upset pick. Everyone loves the Catamounts in March Madness play. The one I will give you though is, how about Duke going down in round one to Oral Roberts? That would be fun.
You know, it's like, where is Duke and UNC? They're just there because they're perennial powerhouses, but it's like, you know, their coaches aren't there anymore.
I know. So. Can crazy. Well, UNC was preseason number one ranked, and they just missed out on the NCAA tournament completely. Oof. Wild scenes there. So, yeah, I think it is Purdue's region. I would watch out for Kentucky, too. This is kind of a loaded team region. A lot of big blue blood names in this region. Mm-hmm. So watch out for the Wildcats to maybe get hot. And my biggest upset, which I'm calling and I'm shouting it from the mountaintops, the Montana State Bobcats getting it done as the 14 seed and beating Kansas State in round one Friday night. You heard it here first.
There it is. You heard it here first. Let's see what happens. Let's go to the west side. So that bottom right side of the bracket, UConn,
Maybe. This one's wide open, Mike. Who do you like here? You know, take your pick, honestly.
I mean, if I'm going to go, you know, really weird there, I feel like Grand Canyon University, I feel like I see ads for them all the time. So I just feel like I need to go.
I wrote about it a couple weeks ago. They have the loudest student section in college basketball. You wouldn't believe it, Mike. It's an absolute scene. I'll send you a video after we get off here. But I don't know. Gonzaga can make a run. Yeah, UConn could make a run. It's really pick your poison here. I do like Kansas getting toppled in the second round to the winner of that Arkansas-Illinois game. So take with that what you will. I watched the Texas Longhorns murder Kansas and pretty much embarrass them in the Big 12 championship. So I'd say maybe I'm leaning between 2, 3, or 4 seed here. UCLA, Gonzaga, or UConn to advance.
Right. In the Midwest, I have to ask who's going to win the Texas A&M Texas second round matchup, because I'm assuming that they're both going to win their first game.
Yeah, a lot of Texas narrative going on. We got three Texas powerhouses in this region.
Yeah.
And a potential Houston versus Texas matchup in the Elite Eight. And the Final Four, Mike, is in Houston, Texas.
Oh, my.
All sorts of storylines for the Cougars, who find themselves at a one seed for the first time in a long time in program history. They've got some issues with their star player, Marcus Sasser, potentially being out, though. So I don't know if they're quite as healthy as they need to be to make that dream run. I do like the Longhorns' chances, though. They've got a great bracket and a decent setup. So, give me Hook'em Horns to maybe get to the Final Four. It'll be fun.
All right. There you go. I do need to shout out the wife's alma mater, Virginia Tech, number one seed I think it's the lower right side of the women's bracket. So go Hokies.
Wow. I didn't realize the women's program's on the come up like that. Good for them.
Yeah. Nice. There you go. They're a good team this year.
Good stuff.
There you go. All right, let's talk football, because for some godforsaken reason, Alex, you'd rather talk about NFL free agency than Major League Baseball spring training.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, silly me. And really, it's just a general comment. Again, I wrote about a lot of QBs in free agency recently, and the numbers are just ridiculous. We really can't talk about it too much right now, because by the time this podcast airs, there's going to be 45 free agent transactions that we can't cover or time travel to talk about. But quarterback money is ridiculous, Mike. Your boy Daniel Jones, $40 million a year on a 4-year deal. The numbers are absolutely crazy for QBs this offseason.
I mean, since we're talking quarterbacks, I need to ask, Aaron Rodgers, is he going to the Jets?
I think he is. I'm hearing it's already done as we're talking right now. So it probably is. And we sound like an idiot for even bringing it up. He's probably already got a Jets jersey on for all we know.
So then my question is he going to start sending pictures of his dick to people just like, you know?
Oh, wow. Like Jeez. You really want him to repeat history with like Brett Favre did. God.
I mean, it seems history is cyclical. And this just looks, he's going to go to the Jets. And then before you know it, he's going to go to the Vikings for a season.
Yeah,
and
it's just,
it's going to happen.
I could see it happening. Yeah, it's not crazy. So, there'll be a whole bunch of dominoes to fall this week, and we'll get back to this in the coming weeks as we get closer to the draft, too.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, our food segment to end every Course of Life podcast episode at Always End with Food on Instagram for all our food content as well. We talked about this brand months back, Mike, if you remember. Was it Von Leeuwen, I think is the pronunciation of the brand?
Yeah, I know what we're talking about.
They came with crazy. A mac and cheese flavored ice cream that we debated the legitimacy of. Well, now I know it's a very real thing because they're back with another mystifying ice cream flavor, Mike. Von Leeuwen now coming with a ranch flavored ice cream. What are your thoughts on this one? I actually don't know if I'm offended by this one as I am the last iteration.
No. I feel like I'm going to vomit on my microphone right now.
It could be a little, there's enough cream in ranch. There's enough. I don't know. It's egg. There's egg in that. I don't know. The seasoning might be the part that throws it off for me. I don't know if I could do that, but ice cream, the newest weird food creation that hit our timeline. I don't know if we'll be trying it, but if you want to do a comparison, let us know out there what you like more, ranch ice cream or mac and cheese ice cream.
Neither. I don't want either.
What were you up to this past week?
So this weekend I was a little late, but Purim was last week. It actually was on Tuesday last week. Okay. It is a Jewish holiday. I'm a bad Jew. Don't ask me about it. I'd have to Google it. So just Google it yourself. But the big thing about Purim is that you make hamantaschen. Hamantaschen is a triangular cookie. It looks like the three-pointed hat, but the bad guy in the story, Haman, wears. So you make Hamantaschen. I don't know why we made, that's why they're called Haman. I don't know. But anyway, It's a little triangle cookie. You put some sort of little jam or chocolate filling in the middle of it. Fold it up into a triangle and bake it off. So we made Hamantaschen this weekend.
What varieties did you do? What, berries, chocolate? What'd you do?
So I did one that had cocoa nibs in the dough and either had raspberry or cherry jam in it, depending on which ones you got. And then a little chocolate drizzle on top.
Okay.
Very good. The little chocolate, the cocoa nibs are not sweet. It's just the parts of the cocoa shell, the cacao shell, the cacao bean. So it's just like intense chocolate flavor and it holds its shape and its crunchiness. So it's a little crunchy.
I can work with that.
It's fantastic. And then the other ones were s'mores. So Nutella, marshmallow, dipped in chocolate and a little graham cracker crumble on top.
You love your Nutella flavor. You love it.
I mean, who doesn't love Nutella?
Good picks indeed, Hamantaschen. Love it. All right, that was Always End With Food, putting a wrap on another great Course of Life podcast. Again, subscribe if you already haven't. We thank you so much for tuning in and making it this far. We appreciate the support. Again, support and thank us by thanking our friends and checking out Desert Fox Golf and Boris Golf as well. Cheers, and we'll see you next week.